TUC Radio San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Y2K, the Year 2000 Computer Failure. This is Mariah Gilardin, the producer of TUC Radio. For New Year's 1999, we broadcast a very inspiring program, an interview with Tom Attlee, the co-author of the widely read book Awakening, The Upside of Y2K. He says that whatever we may think about Y2K, preparing for it, which is prudent and necessary, is not forcing us to do anything we would not really want to do anyway. Living more lightly on the earth, reducing global warming, taking nuclear weapons off hair trigger alert, and caring for the ones we love. Also, finding out, with great surprises in stock, where the things come from that we depend on every day: water, food, electricity, healthcare, or telephone. And taking charge. Many of the Y2K-related risks play themselves out at the very local level: the municipal water system, the chemical plant down the block, the local hospital or healthcare center. There has never been a time where there was something for everybody to do, where every action counted, and preparation for Y2K will make us be better off, whatever the seriousness and duration of the Y2K disturbance. I'm going to a lot of conferences where federal agencies report on Y2K risks and assessments. I hardly ever see any reports on these conferences in the media, which frightens me. One of the rare stories that was published was the 4-million-gallon sewage spill on June 16th of this year in Van Nuys, California. The untreated sewage came from the Donald Tillman Water Reclamation Plant, escaped through a utility hole, and flowed into Lake Balboa Park. The spill occurred when the plant was testing its Y2K contingency plan. A computer closed a gate, blocking a major sewage line serving the western San Fernando Valley and causing the raw sewage to back up and overflow. The monitoring system at the plant did not show that the gate was blocked. Other important issues discussed at the federal level but not reported is Congressman Markey's resolution, introduced on August 5, 1999, to take nuclear weapons off hair trigger alert to prevent an accidental Y2K-induced launch. While large corporations post the amounts of money spent to fix their internal Y2K glitches with the Securities and Exchange Commission to assure investors that they will be operating beyond January 2000, small businesses often are still not even aware of the problem. Here are a few numbers. AT&T spent $600 million on Y2K repairs. General Electric and Bank of America spent $550 million each. General Motors may reach $624 million by the end of the year. If large corporations spent this much on Y2K repairs, it surely must be a real problem. Why, then, is this not common knowledge? Will only the big survive? If the Red Cross anywhere in this country will hand you a pamphlet with a minimal list of items you will need for Y2K, why are the federal and local governments, with very few exceptions, so silent? TUC Radio will broadcast in the next few weeks a mini-series on specific Y2K issues, from nuclear Y2K to water treatment systems, chemical plants, and food supply. For today, however, we will bring you the rebroadcast of the interview by Wendy Tanowitz with Tom Attlee, co-author of Awakening, The Upside of Y2K. Here's Wendy beginning the conversation.
How can there be an upside to Y2K? Last year, I had a diagnosis of angina, a heart condition, and I basically changed my life around when I got that diagnosis. And it took that kind of threat to get me to change. And it feels like Y2K is collectively that kind of a threat. Here we are as individuals and organizations and a society grinding along, doing our thing, and everything is more important to do until you get it, until you get that Y2K is a real threat. And then it's like, huh, we need to do something about this. And if you try and get into individual preparedness, you rapidly realize that if you have lots of supplies and your neighbor doesn't, you become a target. Once you get into this, you realize that your best preparedness is a well-prepared neighbor. And also the realization that we don't know how severe this is going to be. We don't know how long it's going to last. So if we want to stock food, some people say you should stock food for 2 days. Some people say you should stock food for, a week or 2 weeks, a year's supply. I mean, people have all these different preferences. So you're going to have shortages, and doesn't it make sense to, start creating the things that we need, to start having more gardens, to start figuring out how to get water. It's a good idea to start generating some of your own electricity. There are already lots of people from Y2K who are buying solar panels and windmills and stuff like that. The whole sustainable alternative kinds of technology are being used and being sought after much, much more because of Y2K. I would like to look at what we can do so when the dust settles, we are better off than we are now. So we have learned lessons and we have changed our lives like I did when I got my heart condition diagnosis. Make a change that ends you up better. And you make your community more resilient. That community is more resilient if there's a depression, if there's a global downturn, and you have people who know each other, who know how to work together, are into barter networks and can trade locally, the ups and downs of the global economy don't affect them that much. We should develop resiliency. We should develop the capacity to operate in many different ways. So if one thing goes down, we have something else to serve it. What has been wrong is we have operated towards efficiency. We've tried to whittle away everything that wasn't absolutely necessary. This person isn't absolutely necessary in the job, so we fire them. This switch isn't absolutely necessary. We can replace it with a computer. It's like stripping away things, stripping away things, stripping away things. Lean and mean, they say. Just-in-time delivery. So the train drives up to the automobile plant, and out come the parts, and they instantly get plugged into automobiles on the assembly line. These are all fine and good, but it takes a vast amount of highly interwoven technological computerized capacity to keep this thing running. Everything has to work right, or massive pieces of it go down. And that's we've gone way, way, way out on this limb with our highly specialized, totally interdependent computer systems, and the limb's about to break. And we go, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. So that kind of approach, Y2K pushes us to do things that we should have been doing all along, and that in a sense we've wanted to do all along. And people are taking the time to stop and look at it and go, huh, time to really make a change. So that's, to me, one of the main upsides. And another upside has to do with spiritual growth and psychological growth. There's a way in which we have been exceedingly comfortable in this society. We think we have lots of problems, but the problems are, in a funny way, abstract compared to the problems of an awful lot of people in the world. And it's like Y2K, if there are serious difficulties, we will have opportunities to exercise our compassion. We will have opportunities to exercise our ability to let go, to not be so tied to materialist, to material goods and things, to deepen into ourselves and deepen into our relationships with others, to deepen into better connections with nature. These are all possibilities that are presented by Y2K, which the rat race and totally individualized materialistic pursuits of our current culture prevent us from doing. So at an individual spiritual level, there's lots to be gained also.
Well, say you live in New York City, as my parents do, and the electricity goes out, and the heat goes out, and the water goes out, and there's no way to flush your toilet. How do you see that as an opportunity for transformation?
Well, I have serious doubts that if all of the infrastructure, the utilities go out in a large city where there has been very little preparation, I think that is the overwhelming what's going to happen is massive amounts of suffering, probably a lot of death, and most of the people who go through that would not consider it an expansive experience. I think there could be an upside, not for your mother, not for the people involved, but afterwards there may be an upside if there have been experiments and more sustainable living going on where people go, wait a minute, the way we have New York organized is not sustainable. You cannot have that many people living in those kinds of circumstances without massive imports of energy, massive dependence on the oppression of people in other countries, whatever it is. And they would go, you know, all the questions about sustainability and about the way we live, maybe we shouldn't have as large a population as we have. You know, it may come to those kinds of realizations, which are much harder realizations to come to. But that still could be an upside after the fact.
What do you think governments, particularly the federal government, should be doing about the dilemma we're facing with the year 2000 computer crisis?
One of the biggest problems is that people are so focused on the computerized dimension of this problem that they're not seeing the larger impacts on their, you know, on their areas of responsibility, their areas of operation. So many governments are working very hard to get their own computers what's called Y2K compliant, which is fixed up and ready for the turnover. And lots of people are talking about the effect of Y2K on the economy, the effect of Y2K on this, that, and the other, but very few people have been talking about the impact of Y2K on communities. One of the first things I would just love to have governments at all levels start doing is just talking about that, investigating that, discussing what should be done about that, so that the impact on communities, which is where we all live, everybody, including the government people and the people in business, live in communities. That's where the impact will be primarily felt. And governments should look toward the welfare of the community, should focus on the most vulnerable or most needed infrastructure. Everybody needs water. There are things that the government can do to improve the chances that when you turn on the tap, you know, in January 2000, some water will come out. If they would focus on that, that would be just immensely important. If they would focus on getting some of our bumper crops of food stored in the cities, you know, bumper crops of grains and beans stored in the cities so that there would be a safety net for people who didn't have things to eat, should it come to that, that would be really valuable. But those are things you do for benefit to the community. You're not trying to benefit big business. You're not trying to keep government alive necessarily. You're trying to make sure that where you start in your thinking is about what should be done is in communities. You do make sure there's welfare checks because that's needed for the health of communities. So that's one thing. It's like focus on communities. Another thing, because it's really hard for people in government, because anything that you say about this problem that has any meat in it at all has the potential of panicking people. You know, people get freaked if they think there's a big problem that they can't instantly solve or that, you know, there's any problem with solving. So it's really hard to communicate realistically about Y2K without running the risk of people panicking. And if you do something significant to deal with it, you'll be attacked by people who don't think it's a problem. And if you stand back and don't really do anything about it or say it's not a problem, you'll be attacked by people who do think it's a problem. It's really a booby trap area for anybody who, any politician who wants to actually move creatively in this. So what I would recommend to any government, and particularly to the federal government, is a massive involvement of people, of the American public, or of any other country's public for that matter, in working on resolving this and providing leadership in helping people learn about the problem, explore the options, and create solutions that then the government can lead people to do. If I was a politician, I would love to lead people in doing something like that. And that's a different political vision for our country, and that's another upside. If we would do that, and people discovered what it was like to be led in doing the things that were deeply important to them, it would change this country dramatically. You would never be able to put the, you know, the genie back in the bottle. People would go, what are we being run by polls for? What are we, you know, doing these alienated elections for when we don't have control of our politicians, when we could be doing things like this, which are just much more powerful and effective?
Well, our government seems a little preoccupied with other things right now. How do you suggest we get from here to there?
I don't think this is a linear problem. I don't think this has linear solutions. My sense of this is that Y2K is potentially blowing apart an awful lot of the linear and top-down structures of our culture. If it's a major breakdown, this is definitely true. They will not be able to manage it. This is not a manageable thing. They will try to manage it, but it will rapidly get out of hand. And if they manage to get through Y2K, then it will be global warming or the death of the pollinators or something else. We're moving into an era when problems cannot be solved in simple linear ways and top-down ways. They need to be addressed at all the whole system ways. And I think that that is going to become clearer and clearer to more and more people. My own approach has been to think in terms of where are the possibilities. It doesn't make sense to me to sit and watch as our society just heads over the cliff. We are trained by TV and by the nature of our politics to observe, to be watchers, to be spectators at the activities of life, at our collective fate. We're watching the destruction of our planet and the degradation of our culture as if it was a movie, which it is. Every night on the news, you have it. Every day in the paper, you have it. You can watch it as a spectator. And Y2K is a profound opportunity to move out of the spectator role, to move out of the horse race politics, to start saying, what is possible here? What is my role? I'm playing a role. We're all playing roles all the time and everything that's happening. When we sit in front of our TV sets, we are playing an active role in how our culture is unfolding. And I would really like more and more people to start looking at, you know, what did I do today that affected my culture, and become aware of that. You know, the things that you buy, the things that you say, the things that you read, you know, what you do with your time, what you do with your money, what you do with your life, all have a profound effect on what happens in the culture. So I would like to encourage people to, whenever something happens in our culture, to think, what are the possibilities there? What can we do with that? That's the way I feel about Y2K. This is a really weird problem. This is a problem no politician would like to touch with a 10-foot pole. However, there is a way out, and that's empowering people to guide the politicians in handling this. And if, you know, all the people in the country were doing that, things would change around in an instant. The only reason they don't change around in an instant is because 99.9% of the people in the country are sitting watching their televisions waiting to see what happens next rather than doing something about it. And it's kind of sad, you know. There's like a consensual, dialogic, group wisdom form of governance and political life that is as far ahead of our current democracy as our democracy is ahead of monarchy and dictatorship. It's a gigantic leap in that same direction further than we are now. And if I could have even a tiny role in Y2K, of using Y2K to get people to see what's possible, in fact, my life would be made. I don't care if they kill me at the end, you know, for whether it's for food or because I was such a dangerous person. You know, it's like, if I can get this cat even halfway out of the bag, it's going to crawl the rest of the way, you know. So that's what my life's about, and it's just like really, really exciting. And there's a spiritual basis for this also, which I'm still trying to articulate and trying to understand and trying to live, which is as an intrinsic, inevitable, absolute participant in the co-creation of life. Everything that's going on is being created by everything and everyone that exists. And that's a fact. That's just there. And when you really get into it, and this is coming home to us, they talk about the interconnectedness. Well, that interconnectedness you see because of the results of the co-creation. You know, we have global warming is something we are making, we are creating, and we're not alone in creating that. The sun's creating that too, you know, and all the little plants and the peat bogs are creating it too, you know. We're all part of that. And there's a different way of looking at it, saying, okay, I am participating. It's not a question of whether I participate or not. It's a question of how I participate and how consciously I participate. I'm a participant no matter what. If I try and make myself more aware, find out, what kind of role am I playing? Is that a role I want? You know, when I buy something from China, you know, that was made by slave labor, you know, kids in prison or something, it's not, that has something to do with me. You know, do I want to play that role? And if I do, well, okay, then I'm creating that. But it's like becoming more conscious of the role that we're playing in the world and then playing those roles consciously. That's what a democracy is about. That's what democracy is basically. The basic theory is making the decisions that affect your collective life. You know, you should be empowered to do that. And I'm saying you're already making decisions. There's a deep democracy which is built into the universe. You're already making the decisions. Gandhi was a great, made a quantum leap in that. He talks to the Indian masses and he goes, Britain's not oppressing you. You're oppressing you. You know, Britain is just there doing its thing and you're going along with it. It's not a passive thing to go along with it. It's an active thing to go along with it. There is no passive. There is only active. Do you want to be active the way you're being active, or you want to be active in a different way? And people go, whoa, let's be active in a different way. And suddenly the British are out of there. You know? I don't know how to communicate it more vividly. And I know it's taken a long time for me to grow into that, but it's very vivid to me now. And there's a way in which, by our addiction to comfort, our addiction to our own, the sense that we have our own little destiny that we're fulfilling, our fear of pain and death, we have conspired to create the monstrous society that we have. We are not to blame. That's the other thing that disappears in this. There is no blame in this anymore. We're all playing roles. There is, blame is connected to a cause and effect. It's like Newtonian, you know, blame and fault and guilt are the social equivalents of the linear causation of the Newtonian mechanics. You find the cause. That's the cause. And within the laboratory setting, you discover the cause. And then you go out into the world, which is not built like a laboratory at all, and you start applying this powerful linear knowledge that you have and creating what's called side effects, as if they aren't real effects, but they are real effects. You know, our going from, you know, driving our cars, it's not just getting where we want to go that is the effect. We are creating multiple effects, including on ourselves, you know, our dependence on cars. We're all interconnected. Our technology helps us think that we're not. Our money helps us think that we're not. But we are. And what Y2K is telling us is saying, we're going to take away the technology, we're going to take away the infrastructure, we're going to take away the money, and now you're going to find out you're interconnected. You know, you thought you were separate, but you're not. You're interconnected through all these other systems. And those systems are brittle. They didn't evolve through millions of years like natural systems did, you know, like indigenous communities did. They're very brittle. They break. They fall apart. And when they do, you're left alone with your neighbors and your nature, you know, and yourself. And that's what's real. Interesting ideas. I love it. It's like a mini renaissance because of the danger. That's the upside of Y2K, you know. If this is a long-term thing, everything would be going much slower, and there's chances to stick with your old patterns. The fact that there's only a year left forces the issue. And will we make it? What does make it mean? I don't know whether we make it. But the amount of social change that you can pack into this year is gigantic if you try. And I'm willing to try.
You heard an interview with Tom Attlee, co-author of Awakening the Upside of Y2K. It was first broadcast as a New Year's program on January 1st, 1999. Tom Attlee is the co-director of the Co-Intelligence Institute. His website is www.co-intelligence.org. And this is what I said at the conclusion to the program in its original form. What can we do? Begin now where you are. Find out if there are any existing groups or start a group yourself. You can join with friends or neighbors, work within religious or spiritual organizations, clubs, neighborhood associations, or mothers' groups. Work with city, county, and state officials to form committees to make contingency plans for possible failures in electricity, water, sewage, healthcare, heating, food distribution. If there are any hazardous industries in your area, make sure they can guarantee safe operations in the year 2000. If not, work to shut them down. Finally, get information on the internet, www.y2kcentral.org has links to all other sites and community groups. That's www.y2kcentral.org. This is TUC Radio Program Number 1 on Y2K, the Year 2000 Computer Failure. I want to thank my friend Wendy Tanowitz for the inspiration, her research, and the interview with Tom Attlee. TUC Radio is supported by listeners like you. For the full 45-minute program with Tom Attlee on the Year 2000 Computer Failure, send $10 to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. For a credit card order, call toll-free at 877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. The music is by Gia Sauerstiff. My name is Mariah Gelarden. Thank you for listening.